The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
In for John Hockenberry on this Tuesday, I'm Luke Burbank. President Obama paused his vacation yesterday in Hawaii to respond to the attempted Christmas Day bombing of Northwest Airlines Flight 253, telling Americans he's doing his best to keep them safe in the skies.
The American people should be assured that we are doing everything in our power to keep you and your family safe and secure.
The president also said the investigation continues into how exactly Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab was able to smuggle an explosive chemical known as PETN onto that flight from Amsterdam to Detroit. Well, color us curious as well here at The Takeaway. We were also wondering just that thing. What went wrong here? To help us get to the bottom of all this is Barbara Peterson, senior aviation correspondent for Condé Nast Traveler. Hi, Barbara.
Hi.
And welcoming back Chris Yates, an aviation security analyst for Jane's. Hi, Chris.
Hi, good day.
So, Chris, take us through the chain of breakdowns that eventuated in a guy on a plane over Detroit trying to light his pants on fire.
The chain of events, I think, was quite simple. We don't like to think that security at airports is equal the world over, but in actual fact, it's not. This guy appears to have taken his explosive device on in Lagos, in Nigeria. He's gone through the intermediate airport, Amsterdam Schiphol, where he may not have been screened as effectively as we would hope he'd be screened. And then, as a last issue, the watch list that the United States holds on people of interest failed to match this guy with a name on that list. And hey presto, the system failed, and it failed spectacularly.
Barbara, I wanted to ask you about that list. He had been denied a visa by Britain and then was on a sort of watch list called Tide by the United States, and yet these two lists apparently weren't talking to each other. Does this really come down to a communication breakdown?
Well, yes. It also really points out the failure to really upgrade the passenger screening system. I mean, it really essentially is almost the same as we had in place on 9/11. They've been trying to do it for years, and it's been held up by a variety of factors, including some opponents in Congress and elsewhere who are concerned that better information on passengers could lead to data mining and intrusions into people's privacy. So you always have to balance those things in our society, of course. And what's happened is it's taken an incredibly long time to upgrade the system. It's in the process of being improved, but however, that didn't help on Christmas Day, unfortunately.
It seems like these lists are so problematic because just after 9/11, the lists were enormous and lots of very innocent people were being taken off of flights. And now that list has been pared down considerably, and it seems like people maybe slipping through the cracks. Do you think this idea of lists is a good one? It's just about the communication, or is it a little bit impossible just on its face?
No, I think they are actually right now in the process of making it smarter. For example, there's a new system called Secure Flight, where I guess anybody who's recently booked a ticket knows you now have to give them more information. You have to give them your birth date. You have to give them your precise name as it appears on your driver's license or whatever you're using as ID. Now, what the proponents of a better system had really wanted is a lot more information on people's social security numbers and that sort of thing, and that obviously never happened. I don't think it's impossible, and in fact, in this case, really, it was just a matter of they didn't get this guy's name on the right list in time. It's really not rocket science. It just has to be better coordinated.
But Chris Yates, let me ask how it happened that it wasn't on in time. Because, I mean, we have these cell phone videos coming out of Iran. It seems like we have minute-to-minute updates coming from people's Facebook and Twitter. And yet there were so many kind of red flags that could have gone onto this guy's file, and they didn't get to the right people in time.
And I've got to tell you, the secure flight in this instance just simply doesn't work. It will never work as it stands. And whenever any of us over here in Europe travel to the United States, you want everything in terms of information, mobile phone numbers, credit card details, name, address, telephone number, almost to inside leg measurement. But yet, here you are.
Which in this case would have been particularly relevant.
This guy that was required to be provided by the airline to the United States government prior to that aircraft taking off from Europe, and yet you failed to match the name with the name on the watch list. And therefore, the system is simply not working.
Barbara, let's talk about another part of the system, which is the actual machinery. Some people are saying that had this man gone through a puffer machine, one of those ones that blows the air on you, or one of these body scan machines, which have an X-ray and have been said to kind of show a person's naked body, those would have detected this PETN. Those have been controversial, particularly in the U.S., the scanning machines. Do you think this will cause people to change their minds on that?
Yes, I do think that will cause some of the opponents to maybe rethink that. However, let's be clear. Some of this technology doesn't work as well as it's been advertised. The puffer machines you mentioned in practice really didn't work too well. They got clogged up by dust at the airports. There was a high failure rate. So that was supposed to be the great new technology that was going to detect explosives. And secondly, the body scanners, yes, those have been held up in part by, privacy concerns. And people are fairly squeamish, I guess, about, potentially having someone see you literally stripped down to, your body. But that would probably do a lot more to detect people, hiding things on their person. But there's no 100%, foolproof system out there. I think that's what we're grappling with here. And I think there's just all of these things have flaws, and none of them are going to work 100% of the time. It has to be a combination of all these things. And back to the better intelligence that we need and better systems for matching names against lists.
Chris, the president of the U.S. is promising to tighten things up. Is there one relatively simple thing he can do to actually make air travel safer?
Certainly, I think secure flight needs a complete and total revision to make it work as effectively as was initially planned. But above and beyond that, in terms of the hardware at airports, security has to be a system of systems and incorporating all manner of equipment and methods as well. I'm talking profiling here, of course, carrying out profiles on passengers as they arrive at the airport through a series of questions, and dependent upon how they respond to those questions determines what level of additional security is applied to them. In terms of the hardware itself, body scanners work, and I think we need to crank in our necks a little bit and accept a little bit of less privacy for the privilege of being able to travel internationally.
Chris Yates, aviation security analyst for Jane's, thank you so much, and also Barbara Peterson, senior aviation correspondent for Condé Nast Traveler.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.